Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. And joining us in the studio today are Tom Dunn and Chris Holowaty, two of our regular guests, and we're wanting to pick up this show where we left off on our last show. We were talking about apologetics and having a pretty lively and vigorous discussion. And I think where we started out was with some of our shared experience of apologetics in our early Christian walks, coming from a place of historical argumentation from like evidence that demands a verdict and works like that. And we talked about the limitations of some of the modern systems of apologetics and primarily historical argumentation. With that mode of apologetic being limited, are there systems of apologetics that are maybe more viable? And what might they be?
Brad, I don't think we want to really get into like naming systems and this school of thought over against that school of thought or whatever. But there are many valid modes of approaching the whole idea of what's called epistemology, which is the whole question of how does one know? How does one believe? What is belief? What is knowing? How do you know that what you know, you know? That's the whole field of epistemology. And I think something that would be good to clarify right out of the gate here is that both in the scriptures where Peter talks about being ready to give an answer for the hope that's within you, and in the other places of the New Testament where it talks about defending the faith, there's a huge difference between giving a reason or truly an apology, an apologia, a defense for your stance, and utilizing that reasoning as an aggressive, convincing, if you want to say an attack. Really, the New Testament is talking about why do you believe what you believe in the sense of defending it against attack rather than how do I go out and convince others in evangelism. And these are modes of interacting that we've gotten very confused in the Christian church. Instead of trying to say this is how I have a good ground for believing what I believe, we're trying to say this is why you should believe what I believe, and this is how to disrupt what you already believe. And those are two different functions. It's one thing to give an answer. It's another thing to give a proof, and those need to be maintained as distinct.
Now, it certainly is valid, though, to disrupt what someone else believes, yes.
Yes, but it's not possible by the kinds of historical argumentation that we typically rely upon in what is popular apologetics.
I wonder, Brad and Adam, should the goal be disrupting someone's belief or simply stating what I have experienced? I think if the goal is to disrupt someone's belief system, I think that's not valid. I think that's faulty to have that be the goal. I don't think that's part of what Christ called his apostles to do, and then the disciples that would come after them. I don't believe that's their call either. I think it's just simply to be faithful witnesses of what we've seen and heard. And I don't think disrupting someone's faith as an end in itself has anything to do with that and is valid at all. I think if my sharing what I have seen and heard, my experience with Christ, giving an answer for the hope that is within me, why I believe, if that does disrupt someone's faith, well, then that's between them and God, their own soul. It's not really my problem. It's not really what I've set out to do. I'm simply being an honest witness. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I even think that the goal of disrupting someone's faith is valid at all.
Well, not necessarily disrupting someone's faith, but disrupting their worldview so that they'll consider another.
Same thing, I think.
Yeah, but if you look at some of the sermons that were preached, because I think of Stephen before he was about to die when he was giving his preaching or his sermon or his evangelism to the Pharisees.
It's his defense.
His defense.
His apology.
It was very disruptive.
Not only that, but in the course of that sermon or defense, what he does is he gives a complete reinterpretation of Jewish history. He takes the Jewish national narrative and turns it on its head and says this is not a history of the covenant people following God. This is a history and a narrative of the covenant people always opposing God's work. That's why they flip out. They flip out because he does rattle their worldview, their view of themselves, their nation, and their faith.
So what's the difference between what he does to them and what a modern conservative apologist would do to, you know, the Muslim, as far as like trying to tear down their belief system?
I don't see that there's much of a difference, except to say that the modern apologist should not operate under any illusions that by tearing down someone else's faith system, we have in any way validated Christianity. You see, simply to attack someone else's system, turn it on its head, whatever that might be. Granted, we're called upon to be change agents, and now we're lapsing more into evangelism than apologetics, but we're called to be change agents, and the basic call of the gospel is to repent, which is to change your mind, and to believe, which is to change your faith system. I think the illusion that we tend to operate under, though, is that somehow we are giving proofs for Christianity. There is the attack of someone else's worldview. That's valid. That's what any information does. It's different ways to cohere. There is apologetics, which is aimed at other systems of believing. There's apologetics, which is aimed at validating our system of belief. And then there's apologetics aimed at proving our system of belief. And then there's the whole realm of polemics, which is argumentation about doctrines and doctrinizing within Christianity. I think the primary awkwardness is that when one appeals to a different system of belief to validate one's own system of belief, whether it be logic or whether it be history or whether it be science, when you appeal to that higher authority, you have placed that over your own belief system. You're no longer explaining the process through which you believe. You are saying, because this higher validity vouches for my belief system is made genuine and true. But if this were to disprove it, mine would be false.
Well, I guess I'm confused because it seems like if we cannot prove our Christianity, then how can we disprove someone's other belief system?
I didn't know that we were called to do that.
Well, I'm not saying that we're called to. I'm just saying since we cannot prove our Christianity, I can't prove the existence of God. I can't prove the existence of Christ. I can't prove Christ raised from the dead. I wasn't there. Now, how can I disprove someone who says that, no, there is only Allah and Muhammad is his only prophet?
Well, let's separate some of these topics out. First off, there are many ways to disprove something without proving another thing. I can note the inconsistencies of somebody else's argument. That doesn't make me right. It only makes them wrong. To disprove someone else's faith system in no way reflects on one's own faith system. In fact, that's something that we need to keep in mind about this. You might beat down somebody else's faith. That doesn't make you right. Just because you disprove the other person does not mean that you have proven yourself. And we as Christians spend a lot of time seeking to disprove others when, you know, that could be wasted time. We could be proclaiming the gospel in that time. In the same way, now proving ourselves doesn't necessarily mean that we have automatically disproven the other. I can prove my statement without disproving someone else's statement. Theoretically, as Christians, we'll say that we could prove that Jesus raised from the dead. Does that mean that somehow God does not work or has not worked in other systems of faith? Not necessarily so, because Christianity would assert that Christianity superseded Judaism as God's way of dealing with people, and these two are different. So we would say that Judaism was valid before Christ and invalid after Christ, like Paul says. So to prove Christianity in that sense does not necessarily prove that other modes of faith couldn't be valid. It simply says this is our mode of faith.
Then, Adam, to that I would ask, then in our proclamation of the gospel, is there no place for proofs, historical or otherwise? Is it simply in our proclamation of the gospel, are we simply witnesses of how we've experienced Christ?
Well, if I can interject, I'm just wondering, what are we talking about when we say the proclamation of the gospel? What are we trying to communicate? We're trying to communicate that we have encountered God, that we believe that God has made a way for us to be reconciled with him, and that this way comes in the person of Jesus Christ, and that his death and his resurrection has significance. These are statements of faith that we are proclaiming. There is nothing there that we're trying to prove, or I think the point being there is such a competitive nature in what I hear in most apologetics. And I think that's the thing you're bringing up earlier of, am I proving someone wrong? Am I proving someone right? Is the end to simply disrupt their worldview? Is my end to simply win the argument?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I would say that in looking at historical argumentation as a form of apologetics and using it in my own life, not only to strengthen my faith and say, well, here are historical backgrounds for the things that I believe, that I felt also that I had an arsenal of facts to which I could go to somebody and say, look, here's all the reasons this is true. There's no way to refute this. You have to become a Christian. You know, it's like, look at this. It's in black and white. It's right in front of you. It's proof. What's keeping you from becoming a Christian?
I think part of the difficulty is that what we are seeking to do when we evangelize is to bring somebody into a personal relationship with Christ and to a certain relationship with the church and really a saving grace, and that this is based on love and loyalty. It's very awkward to try to say to somebody, here are all of the reasons why you have to love this person. I think we can all think of persons in our lives. I've got the most wonderful girl for you, the most wonderful boy for you. Here are all the reasons why you have to love this person. And you don't. You don't want to be with this person. Yes, but they're wonderful. So, and it's the same way with the Lord, you know? So we can prove to somebody that they ought to love the Lord. Do they? Will they? Additionally, we're trying to proclaim a spiritual reality. So if we prove Christianity in a tangible, physical reality, we've proven nothing about spirituality. We've proven nothing about what actually happened on the cross. We'll say that you could prove that Jesus did die on a cross, that he did raise from the dead. Does that simultaneously prove that Christ died for sins as the Son of God and that his blood redeems? No, all you've proven is a guy got killed and a guy rose from the dead. That's all. Now, you can hang all kinds of meanings around that, but we would say that primarily a spiritual event happened at Calvary, not a physical event. So even if you've proved the physicality of the events, you have not proven the spiritual import that we attach to them.
But you've certainly gone a long way to proving it valid up to, you know, it's like I proved it valid up to this point.
Now believe me on the rest?
Or believe the words of Christ that have been recorded on the rest, because they were recorded by these people that were following him, and you can see that what he was saying was true, that he was going to be killed and he was going to be raised from the dead. And you've seen that, yes, indeed, that was true.
Problem is we're trying to use logic to get to that point, trying to say, well, I have proven all these things by use of logic. Now abandon everything that logic says about the connectivity of meanings and just take it on authority for the rest. Well, if you're going to be arguing from authority, argue authority from the very beginning.
So what is it that Paul says in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians about the preaching of the gospel being foolishness?
And we keep wanting to make it wise.
So it seems like from what all you guys have said that there's a difference between sharing the gospel, proclaiming the gospel, and apologetics. They're almost completely separate things.
Well, I think what we end up with, Tom, is that what we convert people to are philosophical and ethical systems with the names of Christian ideas on them. We've called somebody to a philosophical and ethical stance, and we've convinced them of the viability of that philosophical and ethical stance. Now, what we have not done is necessarily call them to a spiritual experience. And we, as a Christian community, kind of need to clarify to ourselves whether we are proclaiming philosophy and ethics and a way of seeing things through our perception and minds, or whether we are proclaiming truly religious experience, spiritual experience, an encounter of Jesus Christ in a personal relationship.
Let me ask you guys this then. Going back to the example of Stephen right before his death when he preached, what sort of an apologetic was that?
It was simply a reconfiguration of the core of the national narrative in which he says, really, you have always seen yourself as the end part of this whole story that says, we know God, we know God, we know God, we're the covenant people, we're the covenant people. And he says, no, you fought God, you fought God, you fought God, you fought God. So in other words, he takes the three dots. Imagine three dots on a piece of paper. And you can either draw a circle to connect all of them, or you can draw a triangle to connect all of them. Okay? They always drew it as a triangle. He now draws it as a circle, and they get mad.
So Adam, let me ask you this then. What then is the role of apologetics to be in my life as a Christian? And what is a good type of apologetic?
Before you can get into a good, if you want to say, defense or apologetic for one's own faith stance, it takes really wrestling with the idol that we have, that we assume that there can be such a thing as a proof. Proofs really only work in formal systems, abstracted formal systems of logic that are closed systems, where you can have rigid rules for things like math. You can set up the rules of what a plus is, what a minus is, and then you can plug in values and make those rules work in a very closed, abstracted way. we tend to think in our modern era that such a thing as a proof is possible. But there really is no such a thing as a proof. Because all of the systems of believing that we try to hold and form are too broad and too grounded in the human perceptive dilemma. Simple example, Brad. We'll say that you take a kid and this kid grows up all of his life in the sandbox. That's all he knows, sandbox. And he establishes a whole set of rules for how things work in the sandbox. And then he stands up and he goes, from my experience in this sandbox, I can firmly ground that there are children who play hopscotch somewhere else. You would laugh at him. You'd say, there's nothing in the sandbox which has shown you anything about a child playing hopscotch on the asphalt somewhere else. You see, so when we stand in the sandbox of the universe and we say, we have proven God inside the sandbox, we have not proven God outside the sandbox. You can't sit in the sandbox and say, I have derived from the sandbox the rules of the American Constitution. They don't exist there.
Adam, it sounds like what you're saying is, and correct me if I'm wrong or give me focus here, but it sounds like it's my personal experiences versus the Muslim's personal experiences. Is that really what it's all about? Is, you know, this is what I've experienced about God, and I hope that somehow he's tugging on your heart right now so that you believe it? It sounds like there's no place for apologetics in the sharing of our faith.
I still think we're trying to win an argument. If we talk about, well, is it my experience versus their experience? It's the wrong question. The question is, have I encountered God? Do I believe that what Christ did is significant? Yes or no? And I would say, yes, I have. And so I proclaim that. I'm trying to get away from the idea of comparing experiences or comparing, like we're trying to win this argument, because that's not, I see that as being...
apologetics.
No.
No, not at all. See, that's the whole point, is that I don't think apologetics has anything to do with winning an argument. It's giving an answer for the faith that is within me. If I am asked, what is it that you believe? I say what I believe. That's very different from me trying to prove to you that what you believe is wrong and that what I believe is right. I'm saying I have faith that these things are true.
Forgive me for being obstinate here, but then why did Stephen turn the Jewish listeners on their ear if he wasn't trying to disprove their belief system?
They had him on trial. They said, how dare you do this? And he says, look, me do something. It's you guys always fighting God. He's on trial, and he has to give a defense why he believes what he believes. And he says, not even why he believes, but why does he do what he does?
Which is different from telling them that their belief system is wrong. I mean, if he gives an answer why he believes in Jesus, well, he came up, he called me, he did some miracles, he was amazing, and I saw him die on the cross, and I was in a room, and there he appeared and said, here, eat some fish and stick your hand in my wounds, and that's why I believe. Seems completely discreet from, and this is why your guys' belief system is wrong.
Except what he's doing is trying to deconstruct their legal argument that he's the one disrupting Israel. He's on trial for being someone who disrupts Israel and departs from the national narrative, a traitor to the faith, a traitor to his religion and his country. And he turns around and says, no, you're the ones who are traitors to the country because you're fighting God. You always fight God. And don't put me on trial as though somehow I'm the one who's really abandoned the right way of God. It's you guys. This has always been about God meeting Israel, reaching out to Israel, and you guys, that is authorities that be, fighting him.
So we're agreeing that it's different from giving a reason for the hope that's within you.
No. If somebody comes up and says, you know what, I don't believe in your Jesus, I don't believe he even ever existed, why are you a Christian?
My answer would be, you may be right, but I've experienced something that I can't explain. I've experienced a spiritual reality in the form of this Jesus, with the face of this Jesus talking to me.
Yeah, but I experienced a spiritual reality where I had automatic writing and it spelled out everything that my grandpa did on, you know, November 14th, 1927.
I'd say, well then, when we die, we'll see who's right.
It's all about winning an argument, isn't it, Chris?
That's the whole thing. I
agree with you. It's not about winning an argument.
The idea of apologetics is simply giving an answer in the same way that if someone asked me, what is the reason why you're in a relationship with Amy? And I gave an answer.
I love her.
She loves me. I don't need to prove that she exists. I don't need to prove that she loves me. I don't need to prove that I love her. I have nothing to prove at all. I'm simply saying I'm a lucky man because I'm in a marriage relationship with this person. In the same way I believe with God, when I talk about God, I don't feel like I need to prove God to anybody. I don't need to prove that I'm right and they're wrong. If someone talks to me about my relationship with God or asks me why I believe, I said, because I've encountered something I can't explain, and I believe it to be God. Well, what about this? I don't know about that. Well, what about this person's experience? I don't know about that person's experience.
What does it mean, and where is it in Jude, where it says to vigorously contend for the faith once delivered to the saints?
Aren't those more doctrinal issues dealing with people coming to the church and going, this is what we think the church should be doing, or bringing in, being destructive within a body of Christ? Mm-hmm. But that's now dealing with the family.
So then that verse used in that sort of context is taken out of context, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
It's talking about persons, you know, blights they are on your love feast. They're shameful, blown about, clouds without rain. And he's going off on people who are wolves. That's a lot different than talking faith system to faith system. And he's not talking that they're wolves because of their beliefs. He's talking that they're wolves because of who they are and how they interact with people.
Same thing with the false teachers?
Yeah,
Same kind of idea?
That's what he's talking about, false teachers.
First Timothy, right? The false teachers.
And Jude, too. They're both talking about false teachers. But false teachers in the Revelation sense of false teachers, that they teach sensuality, they teach licentiousness.
My point was, it sounds like we're all saying the same thing, that being a faithful witness is simply saying what I've experienced. I've experienced this Christ which I cannot explain, and it has impacted and transformed my life. Therefore, I believe. Because I love him, and I don't know why I love him. I guess it must be because he first loved me. So I'm a Christian.
The difficulty is you may have reasons for that stance, and you may not have reasons for that stance. But those reasons aren't necessarily proofs, because a proof is exclusive and compelling. It must be
and factual that you can measure.
Or at least operant within rules of logic. But a proof demands that it be a certain way. And we keep trying to say, because I have good reason to be a certain way, therefore that compels you to be that way. Because I have good reason to love Christ does not mean that somebody else is compelled to love Christ or that it's somehow proof. Because things which might be proof for me are not proof for someone else. And you say about another faith, someone might have great reasons why they're Muslim. I don't find those compelling. They might even have logical reasons why they're Muslim. That's nice. They have logical reasons for lots of things. There are many ways of arranging logic. That doesn't compel me. If they establish to me logically that a Muslim position was right and part of the Muslim position was that Christianity could not be right, then I would reject the laws of logic. And that's where we keep going wrong as Christians. We keep saying, if logic and science and faith prove Christ, then he is valid. But if they don't, then he is not. But this is a holdover from old scientific modernism, late 1800s, early 1900s. Somehow, if Christ is historically true, he's valid. If Christ is historically untrue, he's invalid. These are separate ideas. So I would say, if logic disproves Jesus, logic is invalid. If history disproves Jesus, history is invalid. If science disproves Jesus, science is invalid. If mathematics disproves Jesus, mathematics is invalid. Why? Because I'm a Christian. Not that Jesus proved himself to me, it's that I know Jesus and I've encountered him. And they'd say, well, that's just spiritual mumbo-jumbo. Perhaps, but it's compelling for me. When God does call me to do things that seem to me crazy, it doesn't seem logical to follow what God proclaims as holiness. It doesn't make sense sociologically. It doesn't make sense psychologically. But when it disagrees with my faith, I reject psychology. I reject sociology. I reject economics. Given the thought for the morrow is economically unfeasible. So when these two conflict, I throw out that which is reasonable.
Let God be true and all men liars.
Exactly. And when we have a faith, we say this is our highest value and highest loyalty. So when something else comes up against it, we throw out that which is secondary. And yet somehow it comes to logic and proof. And we invert it and we say somehow now proof is true and logic is true, and if it goes against our Christianity, then we throw out our Christianity. That doesn't make sense.
Well, Adam, I think that's a good place to wrap it up for today. There's certainly a lot to think about there, and I'm over-processing as it is, so thank you, Adam, for being here. Thank you, Tom. We'd like to thank Chris Holowaty for not only being in the booth today, but engineering the show. Thanks to Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible, and thanks to you for listening. One, three.